To board meeting, and we have all board members present, and Superintendent Davis and Jared Black, our business administrator. We're glad that you're here. We will begin by standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a presentation, Emory High School fees for attendance and tobacco violations.
Would you like me to stand?
It's up to you. We're very informal, so whatever you feel most comfortable.
I'll do this, I'll feel a little bit better.
That sounds good, sounds good. We're just among friends here.
I'll excuse Mr. Stilson, he was planning on being here, his wife informed him he had family pictures. Up the canyon tonight, and he figured he better do that, but he has kind of been the backbone behind this, studying several schools and a lot of schools our size and in our area and across the state, but I guess the whole goal of this, or what we're trying to accomplish, is to get kids to attend school. In past years, when we had court backing, had awesome Judge Johansson, where we could turn in a court referral and things would happen, back, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, we would turn in maybe 2 or 3 court referrals for truancy and attendance issues, and, you know, they would be resolved. Last year, just to give you an idea, how many students that we did have that could have received court referrals for attendance, we had 50.
Really?
So our numbers have drastically jumped, and a lot of us parents are aware of the kids can be away from school, and kids know that, and we have no backbone, no teeth in anything really.
Right.
Our attendance policy, you know, we still have it in place, says you can only miss up to, you know, 6 days, and then 8's a referral, or we try to get interventions from different agencies, JJS, DCFS, anywhere. That's what we did this last year, is try to get some help from other people. But the bottom line is we're trying to get kids to school, and so we're trying to come up with anything that would possibly work. And so I set this in front of you. I think you got one forward to you a while, maybe a week ago, but it's this one's a little bit different, a little revised. But so what we'd like to propose, and we've talked, Mr. Davis has given us some ideas and some suggestions and things that might help, but we have a couple years to try to figure something out. But we'd like to try to do a pilot program for this upcoming year, to maybe get some data and some ideas of what might work and what might not, but and Dean and I are both aware it's going to cause us quite a bit more work, but we're willing to try it because we need kids here. So really it's our same attendance policy, but we are wanting to add a fee to the unexcused absences. So for example, if a student gets to 3 unexcused absences, we would add a $5 fee per absence, so that would be $15. Or, and this is Mr. Davis' suggestion, and I agree with it, it's probably a good thing, but or the 3 hours probation, so they can choose either I'll do my probation hours or I'll pay the fee. Some kids would pay the fee and they don't want to be at a homework class after school. And then the next one, when we get to 5, and our old policy did say 6, but in talking with JJS guys, Brian and Kevin over there in Price, they would like to jump in a little sooner than 6 because sometimes it takes a little time and they may be up to 6 or 8 by the time they intervene. And so we thought it'd be appropriate to maybe bump it to 5. And then kind of the same thing applies. It would be, you know, a $25 fee or the 10 hours of probation, and along with the JJS support. And we did have, at the end of the year, I think the guys over there, there's nobody in detention anymore. So they were out in our school quite a bit the last couple months of school, pulling some of these kids out of class and working with them and going to their homes with their parents, have meetings.
Good.
So I really think we're gonna have their support, and we've talked to these guys about it, and they've been on meetings with us, and they think this is a good approach. But they're fully on board to help us out once they get to that fifth one, or even prior, they said they would jump in and help visit homes and do that. And then just continue down through to eight, and then after we try, you know, the law states we have to try a evidence-based program, and we kind of feel that our homework class has proven itself or been to where we would trust it to be an evidence-based program. I think we may have to submit that to the state, or is that correct?
Well, yeah, all of the evidence-based programs that we would use as part of the restorative justice component would have to be approved by the state office.
So I would fill out send in what we do and see if they would approve that, and so we're hoping that would be approved.
Is this something that other schools have done and have had it approved, do you know?
Yes.
They have, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So you shouldn't have any trouble getting it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shouldn't have trouble there. I think it's just going through presenting it and letting them know that's what we'd like to try to do for our evidence base. And then after we try that, you know, then it gets to the over eight, then we could turn in a court referral legally after we've tried all these steps, which it's a lot of steps in my opinion, but it's nothing more than what we used to do. We used to do the same thing. At three, we'd call the parent, get the student in. At six, we'd do it again. At eight, you know, seven, we'd do it again. But now, in talking with Dean, and I think after one or two, we would definitely call the student in, let them know this is where you're, you know, the next one,
yeah,
it would be a $5 fee. And we have ideas of getting this advertised as far as during our registration. You know, we have a slew of papers parents have to sign. We do it up the first day of school. We'd put it in, have all the teachers put it in their syllabus, and have a signature page for parents. We're gonna do our tip line, or not our tip line, our
parent link.
And just get it out there so everybody was aware of it. I think we can advertise it enough, put it on our website, and really have our teachers hit it hard early so everybody's aware.
So on the unexcused absences, is that per school year, or is that per term?
So unexcused absences are per school year. So the students get right now, we like looking at other schools' policies and the number of days they can miss, we are way
lenient.
We're lenient.
Yeah.
So our kids can have six parent excused every quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then, so these are different days, plus all the doctor's notes, we can't do a thing about other than say, okay, here's your doctor's note, thanks. So a lot of schools only allow like two days or 3 days, and we allow six a quarter. So again, we don't want to punish kids, but we want to try to do something, because right now what happened last year was not good. It just because all the kids that aren't here attending school, their grades are F's, you know. The majority of these kids that had the 50 referrals that we could have turned in, there are kids that are way deficient in credit and straight F's, and so.
I don't think that's punishing kids either. I think that's incentivizing kids to actually do something that's good.
Well,
holding them accountable.
We're hoping it'll deter and maybe give them a eye opener, a wake up call, mm-hmm. saying, "Hey, you guys need to be here. Just us telling you isn't mm-hmm. working."
Well, you said you talked to some other schools. How does this compare to what you found, and how effective it was in those other schools?
So talking to them, they said it's helped. I mean, it hasn't solved everything, but it has helped. Their policy is still stricter than ours. Like, I'm thinking of Richfield, severe schools. Most of them have even a stricter policy than this.
That's why I was wondering, is
yeah.
$5 gonna be a deterrent, really?
Well,
I mean, it might, I don't know.
I don't know, that's, we didn't want it to be overwhelming, but we want it to hurt a little bit.
Okay.
And our idea of maybe where to put the fee or the fees that we collect or put it towards our student reward program. Or help pay for a tractor for, to help us with these kids, to help employ some of them.
Should we be looking at narrowing the amount of days they can miss, like six is maybe too many, or is that a possibility? I don't know, I'm just throwing it out.
Well, it's, so I guess just to, Mr. Davis, we talked about this the other day, and he's got a plan to get a committee together, and we have to have something district-wide, so I think it's our district policy that's six, and that's, I don't know how long it's been that way, for a long time.
Well, we, probably 12 years ago, it was 10. And we've lowered that to six, so it's been that way for a decade or so. But, you know, at that time, we had the juvenile court to refer these things to.
I'm wondering if that's something we should look at.
So that's maybe something with the committee we can try to.
The whole thing is in conflict, the whole idea of policy is in conflict with the whole idea of what's happening with juvenile justice. Because the tone of the new laws is that consequences should not be punitive. Fines are punitive.
Yeah.
They need to be restorative. We need to change the character of the student. We need to provide programs that are going to enrich their lives, that are going to change their behavior. And the fine part of it, and this is why I would prefer to have it as a pilot project, is going to help Emory High immediately. While over the next 2 years, through our committee work, we're able to craft district-wide policy. And as Stephen mentioned, we'll get data from this pilot project that's going to help us a lot. They've got a lot of things to figure out, and it is going to create more work. It doesn't address how you're gonna collect the money, what are you gonna do if they won't pay the fines, you know, things like that. That will create a lot of work. But if it minimizes the number of kids that normally would have been cited for truancy, then we're seeing some positive impact from it, so. I like the idea of a pilot project. We're starting the committee in September, and you're on that committee, by the way.
Great.
Anyway, we're starting that committee, and you remember a month ago that Casey was here, and she was as frustrated as Stephen and Dean are, and Emory High, you know, all of our secondary schools. But we've got to plan something that's going to be workable, it's going to be effective, it's going to fall within the new parameters of the law. Stephen mentioned that the state needs to approve research-based programs, and we've got to establish those. They can be school-generated, for example, homework class,
right.
And there's,
Which is
we started that when I went there as principal, so it's been in place a long time. There's a lot of data to support that. A lot of kids would not have graduated without that program, so I think we can do that. But this will just be part of the entire piece. It'll be helping us determine the best course of action for our district. And I've researched a lot of school and district plans as well. That have been effective. So.
One other question I have is the court referral. When they go to the court, what does the judge have?
What's the criteria?
In his hand, yeah.
I don't know. You know, it used to be.
Disposal to do. Can he put them in detention? Can they?
They can do the same thing they've always
done.
Yeah.
They
just
put it in limbo. The main difference is, it won't get to a judge until you have tried all of these state-approved programs with no successful outcome. And typically, it's not a successful outcome because the kid just won't do it. And a lot of the programs through JJS are voluntary too. We can't force kids or in some cases parents to even support those programs. And but if we make the effort, then we've done our due diligence and we've tried, and we're going to run into some kids like that. And then we can refer it to juvenile court, and then they have the same options that they've always had.
Okay.
I would hope they would do the same that Judge Johansson would do with, you know, put some detention hours at least over their head or stayed, and then pass their classes, attend homework class, just the usual, that
usual stuff.
With a little bit of court backing and probation officer, they normally would toe the line, most of them would.
Any other questions?
Let me mention just at the bottom the other issue that we have been having, and it just doesn't make any sense to me, but an officer at school, a kid could be smoking right there in our hall, chewing, drinking, and an officer can't give him a citation. If they stepped over the boundary of the school property out on the other side of the street, they can give him a citation. So kids have figured that out this last year. We don't have a lot of problems with smoking, but we have a lot of problems with chewing tobacco.
Yeah.
And we had issues with a handful of kids, like repeat offenses. And I mean, we can't do anything with them. We can refer them to a tobacco cessation class, but we can't make them go. We refer them to these JJS guys to help them out. They would go to the home, try to educate the parents, the grandparents. So along with this, we'd like to try to add a fee to offenses to maybe deter again. And this is a real step down from what the actual fine would be if they received it off the street or whatever from a police officer. We got the fee schedule, but we thought it'd be appropriate. For a first offense, it's $50, and the second offense, or even a continued offense, would be $100. In hopes to try to wake them up, I don't know.
And then if they don't pay, they
can we hold back the diploma?
So that's the thing, we can't hold a diploma.
What can we do?
We
can
put them on
probation,
tell them they can't attend activities.
Control their activity card. Anything that's not a property right, you know, anything that is extracurricular, you know, you can, there are consequences there, but you can't withhold a diploma. You could prevent them from walking, which is a ceremonial thing. That's not a property right, like graduation.
The kid might not care, but parents usually want
their
parents to walk, so
yeah,
parents might be a little more.
That's what I thought. In the end,
because the kid probably is like, fine, I'm a
parent would want to see their kid across the stage, and we can just kind of continue that, carry it over, and they're not in good standing, so that means they wouldn't be able to walk. But Dean and I have thrown out the idea of some lunch detention, and you know, kids like their free time at lunch, and if we held a kid in there, and I don't know how me and he and I would take turns babysitting.
Give him a peanut butter sandwich.
But it's something I don't really want to do, and Dean doesn't want to do.
What would you do if they didn't show up, though?
Well, I don't know.
That's another absence.
Yeah.
Just rack them up.
We're just trying to throw
$5, $4.
We're just trying to do something to try to help us out over there. So
So that's a state law that they can.
Yeah, kid.
On
school
grounds.
Is it just during school hours, or is it?
No, it's any time.
Okay.
On school grounds, kids are
bored off at school.
And if you're taking notes for the paper, would you please not write that?
Yeah, do not tell the paper that.
Or about withholding the diploma, would you leave that out, please?
I'm amazed. Sean Bell and our officers are there every day.
Can't do anything.
Can't do a thing.
Can't do a thing about it. He says, if they walk across the road, I can give them a citation, but.
Well, this is
going to
be helpful then.
So.
Let's not advertise that.
Yeah, we don't, enough kids know about it.
It sounds like it's too late.
So.
Word's out.
Yeah, well, if it's in progress, it's worse.
So do you need us to okay this, or what is the?
I was hoping.
We can't do an approval on it because it requires a fee and it's not on the, but you could approve it in principle.
Okay.
And then they could.
And then we'll put it on the agenda for next meeting and approve it formally.
Get going on it.
For next month, okay.
I was gonna say, we're approving the fee schedule, the board could just approve in addition to that when we're approving it.
When we get to the fee schedule.
Yeah.
If you wanna do it that way, but I think you.
I could try it out, yeah.
It's fine.
What about for the junior highs then, or the middle schools?
Same rules apply.
So, I mean, would we do this as a pilot program for them this year too, or just hold off and do it at high school?
I don't think so, I think just the high school.
Just high school this year, see how it goes and then it goes a lot.
Doug and Yvonne are aware of what we're trying to do and, but I think we'll attempt it at the high school and then we can revise after a year.
We could.
Get some data and see what works.
Integrate it into the larger policy that we're working on.
A district policy.
Okay.
Okay, then we'll deal with that in the fee.
Glad we're trying something.
Thank you for your work.
Yes, appreciate that.
We're trying to help.
You can't teach them if they're not in school.
Thank you.
No, thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve.
We have the consent agenda, the warrants, the minutes for June 2018 meeting and the financial reports for June 2018. Any questions on those or discussion?
I move that we approve them as presented.
I had one.
Well, you had one correction.
Oh, yeah.
I had one question on the minutes.
Yes.
Having to do with.
Would you update Jared on that?
In the minutes, it refers to, we went into closed session for two purposes. One was for evaluating problems with a individual and the other was negotiations. But further down where where the affidavit is signed by Laurel, it says exclusively for the evaluation of the person, individual, whatever.
It was a expulsion petition.
It doesn't. Right, it doesn't reference the negotiations at all.
Okay.
So I think that probably needs to be changed.
Yeah.
But that's all I saw, but needed to be addressed.
We can do that and I'll just get Laurel an updated copy of the sign.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, then with that addition, I move we approve them.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, any opposed? Personnel items.
I'm having trouble with my computer.
Yes, I have three names for your consideration. Christian James in the child nutrition program at Huntington Elementary. Charlotte Morris as an assistant tennis coach at Emory High School, it's a girls' tennis team. And Brandon McCandless as an assistant football coach at Emory High School, and I would recommend the board approve each of those.
How many hours is the CNP at Huntington Elementary?
It's, what is a typical part-time?
It varies, it's I'm guessing it's either two or four, but I don't know.
Okay,
I haven't talked to Janine about this one.
I just wondered which position, okay.
Yeah.
Alright. I move that we approve those names as presented.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, any opposed? We have policy actions, update to policy JQ through E, fee schedule, and update to policy GEBDA, longevity benefit.
Okay, the first policy revision, JQE, is the fee schedule. It's identical except for the fee that was discussed last month for the eighth grade technology classes. Because we have a Green River fee for that class, but I talked to Casey and that's not currently a class that's offered, but she recommended to go ahead and approve that for Green River. If and when it's offered, they would be consistent with the other middle schools. And then GEBDA, longevity benefit. This is just a small revision that brings the policy in line with what we had negotiated last year, which was when we originally did the longevity benefit, we had a certain calculation for employees until their 30th year, and then we reduced it after 30 years. And that was to kind of minimize the financial impact, but where all of the upfront payments have been made and it's just kind of a year-to-year program now. We talked with the associations about just making that calculation the same for all employees. And it's really not a huge financial impact. It's probably $5,000 to $7,000 a year, total, for the employees that are on years 31 and above. But this is just an update to put that policy in line. Should have had this several months ago for you, and it didn't really come across our radar until we were calculating the benefit this year, so presenting it for you now.
Okay. We have a motion to approve those changes.
So moved.
Well, do we need to add this to the fee schedule?
Are we, yeah, good point. Are we, is that our intention? Do you think that would be okay?
Yeah.
Do we add this as a one, like,
well, or you
for
can
1 year, do, and then we revisit it for all of that and the junior middle schools next year, or how do we do
I would recommend that you approve it for Emory High this year. You'll either have to prove it tonight or next
or
month.
Next month.
So I say I would like to make a motion to approve it, adding
the fees.
Include that
okay.
in
all
the
right.
fees.
Okay. Does
we
that include
the fee schedule every year anyway, right?
The $50 and $100
mm-hmm.
for
the tobacco
right.
and alcohol.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
we'll
good.
Add that to it.
Okay.
Does that, you made the motion.
I made the motion.
Second it?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? We have appointment of the superintendent.
This
do
is
we
where
need to have step up?
Every 2 years.
Surprise.
Yeah. Surprise.
We didn't talk about
that's right, it is this
no, we didn't. Larry and I have hardly seen each other this summer.
That's
but
right, it is this month.
This is where every 2 years the board
yes.
needs
yeah.
to reappoint
yeah.
the superintendent.
What's the password for
it is July.
Wi-Fi?
It's lowercase wireless.
Wireless.
All lowercase.
That's a geek password.
Something that
he didn't make it geeks rock. That's usually what he
with exclamation
really?
Rock.
And
that's what he does.
No, this one's
no,
wireless,
Doug
but
does
if you ever
those.
Lose your password and Doug resets it, it's probably gonna be geeks rock.
Geeks rock.
With an exclamation.
Well, it's only 8 characters, so that doesn't
yeah.
maybe had to add extra exclamations at the end.
Yeah,
yeah.
At
I
one. What's going
on with that?
At what?
At one. It's got 10 characters.
He's breaking his own rules.
Maybe you put a couple explanations at the end. I don't know. Just heard him say that.
Anyway, this is just the
yeah.
every other year.
Okay, we need a motion. To
I will make that motion with pleasure.
I will second that with pleasure.
You can pay me after.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Thank
good
you,
job, Larry. We appreciate
yes.
all that you
do.
Squeeze
two more years.
Yeah, out. You're going to be good.
Yeah.
Thank
can't
you.
Get out of the contract
yeah.
now either.
Okay, we'll turn the time over to our newly appointed superintendent for.
All right,
it's
now that I have a contract for 2 years, we'll take a 20-minute break.
Okay.
No, I'm really delighted to introduce to everyone and welcome Gary Strackwood. I'm here tonight. He is the interim chancellor at USU Eastern. I hope that's the right title, Gary. I've heard others, but and Gary has been with the college for several years and has done amazing things in our district. I think Stephen can attest to that. I've worked with him personally on several projects, and it wasn't always a good relationship, working relationship between us, especially right after USU absorbed CEU and some of the losses that we felt as a result of that, and we've been building that back up, in some cases mending fences, and I think concerns from that and maybe even some of the disappointment lingered over the years, and as things got better, I think the public was just getting caught up in what had happened 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Gary and he certainly agreed to come here tonight and talk about that relationship and some of the things we're doing. So thanks, Gary, for being here, and we'll turn some time over
okay.
to you.
I'm going to sit right by you while I do this.
That's fine.
Excuse my back. I'm sorry.
I usually preach this way. Tracy heard me this morning, correct?
I know, I have to do it again.
So I'll just tell you a story or two if I could. I grew up in a smaller town in New Mexico, number one. I used to be a high school vocational agriculture teacher and FFA advisor. So you have a great one here, I'm not saying anything, but I'm often invited out to play with the FFA kids, as I call it. And then I picked up the local newspaper, because I always come to town early, buy the local newspaper, drive around. Dennis Woodward is retiring as the county agent. Now, I've been working with this guy for 30 years, this is not right.
Yeah.
But I love Dennis, and I've known Dennis for a long time.
He's a great guy.
And I wish him well, but when I saw that paper, I thought, are we really this old?
He's hired his boy at any time, so.
And you do well.
And his daughter.
And his daughter.
Anyway, he is a quintessential county agent. Because I worked with Extension back in the 90s. I've been with Utah State for about 30 years. I did take about a 3-year leave of absence and went to a small school in central Ohio that has a big football team. And after they won the national championship, I returned. But he knows the story better than me. But I'm a product of the land-grant colleges. I come out of New Mexico, I'm a teacher. I love rural communities, that's why I'm here. I moved, or I was assigned here by the university provost, who is now the president. She called me at Ohio State and said, are you ready to come back? They won the national championship. I said, yeah, you're right, you know, season tickets are only so good. But she said, I want you to work with regional campuses. We gotta do some redesign. We gotta reinvigorate. And oh, by the way, you gotta live in Price. And most people would say, no way. And I said, you bet, I'm ready. And I enjoy Price, because I lived in Tooele. I enjoy Price. You need nobody from Tooele here. Put that in paper. I was in Tooele for 3 years. But I was in Cache Valley for 21 years. And I prefer it down here. I prefer the rural lifestyle and what you have to offer. As I often say, rural schools is where it's happening, because you've got to do it every day with the grit of a superintendent, a principal, and a school board. So I'm sincere about when I say that. I want to start with concurrent enrollment first, and then we'll talk pathways if that's okay. I'll try to limit my comments, and Tracy knows I talk real fast. In 1992, I taught concurrent enrollment at Skyview High School. Even though I was an assistant professor at Utah State, I went 6 miles up the road because Skyview needed some help, and we designed all this. And even though I'd been a high school ag teacher previous, and I went up to Skyview, and they were on the similar AB schedule back then. And then fast forward, last year I taught at Carbon High School, concurrent enrollment. What courses I'm teaching is the same lame course, as I call it, Food Matters. That's the name of the course. To him, food matters means one thing. To him, it means something else. What is it? It's a humanity course. But I've been active with concurrent. When I moved here and I found out that there was some concerns about concurrent in the Carbon District and the Emory District, I'll be honest with you, that's one of the places I jumped in. Why? Because I have a background with high schools. I have a background with secondary schools. I like kids, and I can do some things that I like. So I believe I've rebuilt some relationships with both Carbon and Emory, and I'll share with I'm not going to take all the credit for this, but I'm going to take some of it. But it's also these gentlemen that I've worked with, because I came down to superintendent's office when he was principal 3 years ago and sat in there with him, and he more or less put me in line about what we needed to improve. And we've slowly made some improvements, I believe. We're not there yet, folks. We need a ways to go. But we have a couple limits, as you do have limits. We have the State Board of Education standards for concurrent and the Board of Regents standards for concurrent that limit us. As I heard yesterday or the day before at a community meeting in Carbon County, why can't we do concurrent after 3 p.m.? That's a state rule, that's not my rule. Get the state board to change that, because we would love to run schools later in the day. I think that's important. Those are little things that we fight with. Then we have the Utah State standards that have come in that had some effect with the original merger 8.5 years ago. We've worked through some of those. I advocate for small schools all the time and recognize that I'm in Moab sometimes. In fact, Monday I was in Moab. Or I'm in San Juan County sometimes. We have less than 800 and 90 students who graduate from 10 high schools in four counties. That's the data from 2017. I ran the data the other day. In Cache Valley, that's two high schools, right?
Two.
But I've got 10 high schools down here that I'm working with, and as I address you tonight, I'll talk about primarily Emory, because he's here, but I know Casey well also, because I've been to Green River a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I try to serve both of your districts. And so I've got a little bit of data to share and a little bit of discussions, and that should segue us into what I call pathways of what we believe we need to do better also. I'm here to say that we need to move this forward and how we might be able to accomplish some of that. Larry, this is the data I summarized and gave to you a couple weeks ago, no surprises.
Right.
And I have the raw data that backs all this up on a larger sheet. In fact, I'll give this to my colleague to unfold the saddle blanket, as I call it. He's got the raw data. I just grabbed some stuff, and I wanted to show you,
thank you,
where we have been.
Thanks.
And this data comes from my records, so excuse me if the numbers are a little bit wrong, bookkeepers, because it might be slightly... But what I want to try and show you, we run this fall and spring. Why spring is always light is a lot of your courses in the fall run all year. They're your long courses. Mm-hmm. And that's why the spring always looks a little bit lighter. I'm looking at the number of courses, and those are actual courses that are in the USU system for academic credit, lower division. And he's got the saddle blanket that backs it all up. I'm looking also at, I'm sorry, I can't quite read the numbers, but the duplicated numbers. You have children in the schools. Some of them are taking one, two, or maybe three concurrent courses.
Yeah.
So it's a duplicated number. When I show on there that we've gone from, you see the bigger numbers there?
I'm looking right here.
Yeah, he's got the better numbers there. Show some of the stuff. We've gone from about 154 to 434. So you can see the growth in a couple of years. That is because of both the relationships we're trying to rebuild with Emory School District. You see Green River down there also. Principal Davis was instrumental in getting us on the right path. Principal Stephen is equally valuable, but we think we're moving in the right direction. If you look at the exact courses which Superintendent Davis has a collection of, are they the right things we're doing? Green River, I gave you the Green River numbers, and they're small, and we do the best we can. What we're doing in your Emory High School is we have many of your teachers that are certified, endorsed, approved, sanctified, I don't know what term it is, by Utah State University Home Department in Logan to teach the course. And so that's why we have two different English courses that we teach, 1010 and 2200, I believe it is. And 1010 had about 80-some kids over there. 2020 had a lighter amount. But we got the numbers for the last couple of years. Not every kid can be in concurrent. You've got to be a junior or senior. You're supposed to have a 3.0 GPA. You've got to have certain qualities, so it's not for everybody. We do, however, have within your program that we do some automotive and we do some welding. And we do that through two of your instructors that we, again, have approved, that we believe bring value to your programs. We're trying to expand in some areas, and we've tried some different experiments, and we've been shot down on a few, including the biology anatomy one the other day I need to bring you up to date on. That's an issue that's for me. But then we talk about what should we be putting back on the plates? What should we be giving? And do we have too many options? And this is where working with the school board and administration, more of a workshop than a presentation to right size concurrent for you. And we believe we can do that through pathways, which I'll kind of segue into. We have 19 courses that we should have all approved for fall semester. And those are similar to the 19 courses before. I apologize we didn't expand that 19 group yet. Although driving out here, I talked on the phone about those other courses that I'll get
in
to.
The phone.
If you don't ask me about Larry, I'll bring up. So, but those are what we have firmly that you can see ready to go in some different areas of technology, healthcare, as well as just some general humanities. The other thing we have the option for through Utah State University Logan is broadcast-in courses. They're on the tri-semester. I apologize. They came up with that plan in Logan. It serves most of their needs. Carbon High fights me on it also because they're not on trimesters. But we find that statewide, if we could deliver those general education courses and how many you can receive based upon the size of the auditorium or the classroom the student has, that's part of his limit in facilities, we would like to see expansion on that. We are not doing online concurrent, not yet at least. No, that has not been approved by anybody, but that's probably the future as well. The other limitation we have, and I'm going to apologize on behalf of Utah State, is somebody called Carnegie. Anybody know the history of Carnegie units? Where the heck that stuff came from 120 years ago? You haven't had that class yet? You can enroll, I'll give you a good grade. The idea of Carnegie units is seat time, and how many minutes your butt needs to be in the seat to get a unit of instruction. Carnegie is where all this comes from. And it's all this fancy study of what we need. We apologize because Utah State is stuck into 15-week semesters, 3-semester-long courses requiring 3 times a week for 15 weeks, 45 hours in the butts in the seats. That's what they're calling it. And we're trying to figure out a better way to roll that out. The tri-semester idea is not the best idea yet. The idea is that we're trying to do is half-semester courses at 7 or 8 week periods. We're doing more of those on the Utah State campus. The third thing we need to do, and if we're young enough to stay around for the next 5 or 8 years, is the hybrid courses that we need to deliver. That means that your student is in class 3 days a week this week, 0 days the next week, 2 days the next week, no time, it's hybridized. When do they need to be in based upon the learning content? Back again to Carnegie units. Carnegie units say, we need a kid in class Monday, Wednesday, Friday for 45 minutes or 70 minutes. Or we need a student in attendance. When we go to this hybrid type, I call it self-directed hybridized learning for high school kids. It's not here yet, it's not perfected. I think rural schools will benefit by it because you've got the flexibility. Big city schools are so locked in to bus schedules and athletic schedules. You've got more flexibility out here. It's why I kind of like rural schools, not the locked in by the big city school attitude. So there's some things we might do in the future. I apologize that we can't do more in Green River. They don't have enough teachers that have the credentials to teach some of our courses. We broadcast some courses in, is what you're seeing, and that's why the numbers are so small. If we could do more things down there, that would be good. I want to stop the rumor right now that Utah State is pulling out of Green River. Every time I stop at Ray's, that's what they told me. And I said, no, that's not true. We're not pulling out. In fact, I'm reinvesting. I've got 2 people that work down there as a facilitator. I'm trying to find other ways to do things, attracting. We actually have 2.5 students in Green River. And that sounds like a crazy investment of my time and money. But as soon as we pull out of Green River as a university, I don't see somebody else coming back in. And so I know it's valuable to the community. I know I'm losing money there, okay? I'll just be honest with you, but I value small communities like Green River to be able to say we have Utah State. Now, and I fight with people all the time, put them back on the map. When you pull up the Utah State map and it has the 33 locations, right? You know they took Green River off. About 6 years ago, they took Green River off for some reason, and I'm fighting to get it back on the map. So when you see that on the map, you'll update some things for me. So it's kind of funny because we give a beautiful map of Utah, and they put down Beaver, and they put down Kanab, and they put down almost my favorite Junction. Everybody's been to Junction? I've been to the site several times. Paiute County. Yeah, it's a good place.
The same size as Green River.
We need it on the map. So we're working with some of those things. So he's got a bigger map that, Superintendent, may I leave it or should I leave it or you want to see it or do we enter it into the record? It has my data on it. If I'm going to hand it to the soup and let him decide. It's similar to what you did. All I did was change some colors. It's similar to what I gave you the other day. But and maybe it's more something that he keeps for a workshop session that we might have on concurrent and segueing now into pathways, if I could. Okay? Most of you have seen this. I did not make you a copy. There's 54 pages of this, and you've seen it, it's online. And it's up to 54 this year. They changed every year just slightly. This is the front cover shows. These are what the Utah State Board of Education is using as what we call pathways. I just highlighted some things here that I thought Green River and Emory High School would be interested in, and how do we get to that level. For example, there's one down here under what we call the technology area, and it has to do with whether that's technical sciences such as diesel mechanics, auto mechanics. Yeah, we can do some of this. This is the backup detail to it all. And each one of these represent an individual program. I'm working with Carbon. Let me tell you the story about them. We recognize that we have, I believe, 54 of these sheets in here. Everything from culinary arts to healthcare to vet science. It's all in here. There's different pathways. And it shows the pathway from the high school to a post-secondary training. And it gives names and numbers to it. And it's kind of nice. Yes, and it's all done by SIP code, so we can keep everything safe. Okay, and if you remember, who came up with SIP codes? I think the same person came up with Carnegie units. But, if I were to distribute, I'm going to give you out a couple of these. I'm just going to give these out randomly, and you might figure out why I'm giving them out randomly. I just want to show you a sample of what this might be. And if you've seen these before, just indulge me for a moment. And if you haven't seen them, I'll see if I can maybe explain a little bit to you. Okay, you ended on carpentry. They're color-coded. If you look at the bottom, 12th grade, one-year certificate, two-year associates, four-year degrees. So they show a pathway, and they show the other buzzword that we seem to be using a lot, and that's stackability. And we're talking about credentialing. And we're talking about how a high school student can start and do certain things. And if you notice, I started over here with Ms. Johnson, they're in agriculture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then agriculture, yeah. That just alphabetical order, that's all there is. But you can see by the SIP code what the foundation courses are, perhaps, and then the elective courses. You could see also, depending which one you have, how qualified is your teachers to be able to do some of these things by SIP code. So then I go back to my principal, my administrator, my scheduler, my counseling group, and we begin to put together the map to how to do this for your small rural school based upon the personnel you have, your partnership with Utah State University to make some of this happen. And so you can see how these are all laid out. The state has done the work for us. Now, this pile represents 54 all the way back to, you know, cosmetology, barbering, mechanical engineering, composite materials. There's some really cool, sexy things in here if you live on the Wasatch Front.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Salt Lake School District, if you're in Utah County, if you're even up in Ogden, there's some cool things. But when you're in Carbon, Emory, and even Grand and San Juan County, we're somewhat limited. So, yeah, ag is there because we all like ag, and ag we could do something with. But these are all pathways that are specific towards occupations. What they did add this year, back to my general list, I think I saw about 23 that might fit in your district. They added this year the one on teacher preparation. That's a new one. In the past, these were pretty vocational areas, you know, healthcare vocational, mechanical vocational type areas. But they did throw that one in this year, and that has to do with educational training. And there's two levels. You can either do the pre-K and K the level, and then K through 12. And we are doing that this year. We have one of your history teachers now certified to do that, and he will teach our TEAL 1010 course and then supervise some clinical experiences. That's our foot in the door. And then from there, we build into some other areas because we want to home grow teachers, and we want to get them involved. At the same time, I'm trying to hire a second teacher educator at USU Eastern. We have a position description out there. It's ready to go. We're ready to hire somebody to help us in the Southeast because I serve with Larry on our Southeast Service Center group, right?
Yeah, SES.
And that's one of the hot buttons for all the superintendents in the Southeast is more teachers. And so we're trying to get that started here. So Emory's in pretty good shape, and Carbon, by the way, because we're going to make sure we have those courses and pathway there, in a sense. You do good things in welding, machine shop, and automotive. There's no doubt. I like that. You do a pretty good job with the drafting design courses, correct? Yes. He had 11 students in there this year. I checked grades on it. Don't worry. And that we're ready to go, okay? He knows I watch people in my ways. But I'm trying my very best to make sure that we can serve you. Now, the not-so-good news, Superintendent. I'm trying to get the healthcare pathway developed. you have people here that might be potentially able to serve with us. The anatomy, physiology, because you don't have a lab, specifically a cadaver, I was shot down on that this year. We changed department heads in biology, what, 2 weeks ago? You weren't even aware of that, were you? You changed that?
No. Isn't there two? Didn't education move too?
Yeah, education moved too.
Okay, maybe there was two that were.
This is the value of having an old guy like me down here is I'm out living people up there. We've had a change in two department chairs, so it provides me some opportunities. And so I was told no by one person, but let me work on some things for yes the next time. So we're still, but back to healthcare. CNA, you have asked me about, how do we deliver that? How do you deliver that in a smaller community? Certainly I can put it on the airways. I can broadcast the lecture. But you've got a second part in there of what's called the practicum and a third part called the clinical. So really, it's a more complicated program. We can deliver the first one third. The second third, where it comes into practicums, where students in the CNA area need to have some practical skills at the high school. And they're not drawing blood. They're not allowed to. Okay, just cut it out. But the clinical experiences in the nursing facilities, the care facilities, is our bigger hurdle. According to my inside contacts within your county, especially. There are one or two areas that said, yeah, we might be able to do that. But if we at Embry are sending down 30 students every semester, we're going to bottle them up. So that's a program that I still want to do, Larry, and we're still working out the details. And it's going to drive your guidance counselor nuts when I come up with this wonderful plan of how we're going to do it. But we've got to start with healthcare. And I'm being generic when I say healthcare. CNA is the doorway in, as most of you realize, okay? My daughter graduated from Logan High. She had her CNA before she left Logan High because she had the Applied Technology College. My daughter now is a registered nurse in an emergency room. She's in her mid-30s. She does wonderful. But she will tell you that was her pathway. Mm-hmm. And whether you like it or not, she did these things, but she had a little bit more opportunity in a bigger system, in a bigger setting. In our healthcare area,